Thank you. Merci, la comic. My name is Claude Grenier. I'm working with Takamut Nipingat Inc., TNI, for almost 19 years now. I was the director general for many years, and in December, last December, Julie was named director general. So now I'm just senior advisor in the transition period. By July, I won't be involved with Takamut Nipingat anymore.
Yes, you will be.
First of all, I would like to thank you, Jack, for your summary of local radio. I think it was to the point. And in Nunavik, we live the same thing. Each community has a local radio, plus a regional radio, our radio, but your description was very good, and it applies to our local radios also. There's nobody here from Nunavik to talk about the local radios. We touch it a little bit because we provide them with technical assistance, but their operation is really in the community, internal. They fall under the Northern Village Corporations, and they really operate the way you did describe at the beginning. So thank you. Just to say, TNI, what we do three things. We operate regional radio since 2006. Before that, we were under the CBC. We also operate a community television. It's a community channel where we broadcast video programs. Everything we do is in the Inuktitut language. And also, like I just said, we provide technical assistance to the local radio stations. If I go more to our regional radio, it was quite something to get our regional radio going. When your members tell, we are not for profit. We exist since 1975. We celebrated our 40th anniversary in 2015. And in 1999, when our board of directors said we need our own radio network, we turned around and said, okay, let's do it, but no money, no know-how, no nothing. So we had to dig quite a bit. And we always did approach it in a way where we want to be legal. We don't want anybody, like if Claude Grenier goes tomorrow or any board members, or we wanted to make sure that the structure would be an official one and that nobody would just from one day to another say, they're not legal, they don't exist, forget about them. So that's why I said earlier, we went into the CRTC policies and went to see exactly all things had to be done, and we followed that. What I mean by that is, in the policy, CRTC policy, there's an opening for community radio, for native radios, and we use that. They call they speak about type A, type B. Type A is if there's no commercial radio in your community, and type B something else. So we fell under the type A radio, and we followed the procedure, which was Industry Canada, which is very technical. And then, because we were exempt by the CRTC, we just had to fill in a form, send it to them, and we got a letter from them to say, thank you for letting us know that you exist. And you're the one responsible to make sure that you follow whatever policies in place. And if there's a change, you let us know. So this is exactly what we did, and our regional radio exists since 2006, and each community has its Industry Canada license. I mean, we call it a certificate. We have a certificate. And we have a letter from the CRTC saying we know that each community, that you're broadcasting in each of the community. So to me, it was very important to have this policy in place. We were able to follow it. It avoided to request for a license and all the expenses related to that. It was simple for us to do, and we did use that for the radio.
Well, no, and I think that, I mean, my experience, I've been with CBC here for 27 years, I guess, something like that. Prior to that, actually, I worked in an organization similar to Claude. I worked with Ojalatigi Society in Northern Labrador and was involved in licensing stations at that time under the old policy, which required a whole lot more work and grief and aggravation and forms and paperwork and all of those sorts of things. So so my observation was, as I think Claude says, is that the change that happened to the Type A, Type B was actually probably a helpful and useful thing. I know it certainly would have been to me in Labrador when we were doing that back in those days. So it's so I think that's interesting. I think the point that Jack was making early on, and I agree, I think Jack hit the nail on the head in terms of some of the dilemmas that face community radio stations, local radio stations in Nunavut, is in Nunavik, you have TNI looking out for some of these kinds of things, working with the organizations. Here, it's partly the CBC that does it, partly in the same kind of way that TNI does. We help when we can, but we don't have funding to provide. And we're constantly dealing with, I've got two messages on my phone right now about problems in Whale Cove and Satakilowak where they can't, the local radio doesn't work and nobody's got money for it and no one knows quite how to get that done and how to get it fixed. And so we're trying to help people to take a picture of your transmitter and send it to us. We're trying to assist people to keep the services on the air, partly because they carry the CBC, so it's important to us, but also because, as Jack pointed out, it's a really important part of the communications infrastructure in the community. So, you know, from a policy sense, I think that's I think it's quite interesting, and I've been able to, in some instances, talk with people in local communities about being able to utilize the Type A thing as a means of, you know, you can get an okay to set up your own station. It's a relatively easy process. People are still a little bit intimidated by it because it is the CRTC, and the problem, I think, is a little bit that there isn't a place you can go easily to get information to help you with the process if you're in the community and trying to get something started. So we do what we can, but we can't do it all either.
For the local radios, I don't think, maybe a few of them did register at the college, register at the CRTC using the same policy window, Type A radio, but I think most of them are just operating with nothing, you know. But for sure, if someone from our audience is not happy with our programming, they can turn around, go to the CRTC, and we're there. Not officially, they won't be able to say they have a license number whatsoever, but they can say it's Taklamyut Nipingat, and they'll find us that we're exempt. And you can talk about us. And if something comes up, they'll probably get in touch with us and say, okay, there's something going on. And I find that's also very important. We have radio producers, you know, things happen, and sometimes, I know on the local radio, it happens a lot, where, you know, people are not pleased because someone was under the influence and went on radio, and people are complaining. But if they call the CRTC, they won't know what you're talking about. the radio doesn't have a license or I'm not part of the CRTC process. I'd like to add a few things about radio, because when you read, and you were right at the beginning when you said it's, you read it and you're kind of lost, like, is it official? Is it just a public notice? Is it, you know? But they are in, I think the content is there. There are interesting things in there. And like the policy, I don't, can't remember which one, I have it here, but they talk about the NNBAP, which was the program at the time from Canadian Heritage, where it says there are 13 regional communication societies. That was replaced by the NAB, and there's not 13 anymore. Last year there were 17. And guess what? There's not more money in there. So the same money is divided by more people, so you end up with what? Less money. So you run a network for years and years, and then from one day to another, you're being told, oh, you were cut by so. In the last 5 years, we have an average cut of 17.2%. So you hire people, in the following year, you say, oh, we're in trouble. In 2016, 2017, we had some drastic decision to make. We had to cut and provide the same service. I don't know if there's any other radio stations in Canada that can do it. For native, it's like from one day to another, it's just normal. Jack spoke about training. When we lose an employee at the radio, there's nobody to replace that person. There's no training in place. It's, and let me tell you, radio is not an easy thing. Radio, you have to master the language. You have to prepare your show. You know, it's a lot of work. It's, you have to be qualified to do that. What do? We take someone, we sit in there and we say, you do a radio show. Guess what? Next day he's gone. No, because he doesn't know how to do it. It's a big thing, and we have to be there. We broadcast from 9 in the morning to 9 at night, 5 days a week, Monday to Friday. We do 4 new content shows a day. So our people have to be there. They have to be ready, and they have to put their shows together. We were doing 5. 2 years ago, we were doing 6 radio shows, new content shows a day. But as you see, we're cutting. Cutting more music, reruns. We have no more evening shows. We play reruns. I agree with the reruns, because when you play new programs during the day, people are working. It's hard for them to follow a good show and so on. So we play them at night. So I find that's okay. But the funding is a major issue. If the CRTC mentions in its policy NNBAP, 13 regional communication societies, it's because they are aware and they support it. So maybe they should put some pressure somewhere for that money to have. It's the same money since, I don't know, 25 years,
yeah.
30 years. No indexation. Our people get paid less than, we're not competitive on the job market. So when
not
someone,
even close.
Yeah. When someone gets out of school, what do you think they do? They go for the big box. I would do it. They go for the big organization with big benefits, housing, and so on. If you come at TNI, you have no housing, very little benefit, very small salary. Come and work with us because you like it. You know, we like you. You like radio. And let's do it together.
I'm Salome Abba. I've been with CBC for 19 years here at Iqaluit Station. And we broadcast from, in the olden days, from 6 a.m. till 6 p.m. and a break from 10 till, it used to be from 10 till 12 in the morning, Eastern Time. And we also broadcast at night from 10 till 11, Sinaksauti. So that's a lot of radio programming. We also do television with Igala in Inuktitut. And we also help out from this end on television with North Bay in Yellowknife. One of our Inuit reporters do actually broadcast there. One of the challenges we have in broadcasting in our indigenous language is finding people who are educated to be ready to jump in to become reporters. Nobody has gone to journalism school in the station that I've been working for 19 years as an Inuk reporter. We hire them off the streets, what we call off the streets, and they come in and we try to train them as much as we can because it's overwhelming. It's a lot of work. You need the voice, the knowledge, the techniques that we have to learn, the writing, everything. All these years, we haven't really had a time or a chance or the money to put modules how to train Inuit to become broadcasters. We have brought in people from CBC Toronto, Human Resources, to teach Inuit in English classes how to become reporters. I knew nothing 19 years ago about how to do reporting or production, but I was demanding that I need to learn today, not tomorrow, so I can perform better as a reporter. Because I was demanding, somebody eventually brought somebody all the way from Vancouver. Yes, we had money in those days to train me for 2 weeks. And that's how I got into the business of being at CBC, being a journalist. It's one of our biggest challenges in getting Inuit to become reporters is training them and actually bringing them in. How do we bring them in? How do we get them interested? Because most of us in our traditional culture, we were not allowed to announce anything about anybody about anything. It wasn't our thing. You are not supposed to talk about anybody at any time. Absolutely taboo in our Inuit culture. But we do it with CBC because people need to know what's going on in the communities, and I feel it's important that we need to inform people what's going on in our language. And one of the things we know as our audience is Inuktitut is the way to go. We obviously know that. It's 85% of the population. Not so much in Qitlmilk because they're losing their Inuit Nakhlut, sadly. Large communities like Iqaluit and Rankin-Imut, we're also losing our language quite fast. But in smaller communities like Iqaluit, we're very important. They need to know what's going on in Nunavut. They want to know what's going on in Nunavut. And their Inuktitut language is extremely strong. Same as Panyuktuk, Braut, Qikiqtaqtuaq, Mitimateri, Akvian. All these communities have very strong Inuktitut language and they prefer to hear it in Inuktitut. Yeah, we have different dialects and we may not understand each other, but it is very important. The other thing that I think Inuktitut broadcasting has been a very crucial part of this is keeping the language alive, keeping it strong, keeping it out there. Children who may not know or hear Inuktitut language, they'll hear it on radio, and you know they might pick it up. Hopefully they do if they don't know it. But the thing is, it's very important part of our keeping the language alive, and that's I think it's part of me, and I want it to continue, but it's the challenge of hiring Inuit to easily become reporters at our stations are our daily challenges, and I hope I know it's not part of the policy, but I know people choose whatever the career they want to do, but how do we get people in the media world in our language? And we want to keep it that way. We want to keep it going. So anyway, I'm talking too loud now, so I'll give it back to you.
Thank you. Just a few facts to kind of support what I said earlier. The average age of our radio producer is 62.5 years old. We have no youth working to become radio producer. And guess what? The population of Nunavik is getting younger and younger. So we have a problem there. We use what we call community reporters. What they do is once a week, community reporter will call our station and does a report. We try to get training for these people because they're very important to us, and we feel that they are the future of radio broadcasts. Not possible to get training for them because they say they're not full-time employees. So we're going in circle. At times we'll find someone in the community and right away is on the spot, he knows what to do, he's got some experience with the local radio, whatever. But other times the person has no idea how to prepare his community report, and it becomes very, very difficult. Training is a big issue because when we try to get training for our regional radio, we're being told we'll provide you with training only if the local radios and your radio, your regional radio, get together. And the two radios are very different. The local radio operates in a very specific way. In our regional radio, we operate in a very different way. So it's, I'll give you an example. We use a radio software to do our programming, what we call the DALE. It's a DALE system. The local radios don't use that. So us, we do everything on this system, and in the local community, they just do it live. So for sure, if we put a training together, we're going to be asking to put a lot of the training modules on the data system. If there's a local person attending this training, he's losing his time because he doesn't have this piece of equipment to work with. Also in 2015-2016, we had to implement a new radio distribution system. We couldn't do it anymore with Telesat. So we had to turn around. Now we do our distribution through the internet, and locally it's transmitted. We have a transmitter, antenna, and so on. So on my part, it's okay. One more thing about radio. There's no money for infrastructure. So our building is very old. It's two DNA buildings put together. The floor is, you know, you have to, sometimes you get seasick when you walk. And there's no money for infrastructure. So, and if we want to rent space, we're looking at $70 a square foot, which is completely impossible for us with the funding we get. I would like to go to our television network, community network, if it's okay with you guys. A few years back, at one of our board of directors meeting and annual meeting, we were asked to increase the number of video programs in Inuttitut. We knew that this was not possible with APTN. I'll get back to APTN later on. So we decided to create a television community network. Again, we used the policy in place. what we did, we sent an email to the CRTC and said, we're trying to put this thing together. We're going through local cable distributors. We're lucky in Nunavik, in our 14 communities, we have co-ops, and co-ops have started cable in their community. So the idea was to use the cable distributor and put together a community channel through them. As you know, the cable already has a license from the CRTC, and we fall under the what they call in the policy the community television. And if you look at the policy, I won't go through it, but they tell you exactly what you can do with a community channel. For sure, the first thing is has to be community programming. That's all we do on our community television network. We are in the 14 communities. Right now, we broadcast 4 hours a day, Monday to Friday. They're 8 to 9 in the morning, 12 to 1, and 6 to 8 o'clock at night. On Saturday morning, we have 2 hours for the kids, for children. And on Sunday, there's nothing. But our network is good for 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. We are presently working on video archive. When this is done in the process, we'll be able to play those videos on our community channel. People just love it. It's all in Inuttitut. People are asking for more. For sure, elders are very enthusiastic about this because they're at home. They can't go out anymore. They're elders, and they really watch our TV. So they're asking for more and more, and we're in the process of providing them with more. This was easy to put together because, like I said earlier, we have local cable in our communities, and we were able to use that to proceed with this this project. It was not easy. Again, we had no money for it. I'm a gambler, not at the casino, with my work. With the radio network, we gambled, we had no money, we took the chance, and it worked out. It took years, but it worked out. Same thing with the TV. The TV is it's in progress since about 5 years now. We started with three communities because they had three different setups, and then we added more and more. We were up to 10, and this year Julie is in the process of finalizing it. I mean, they all have it now. We're just going through a new process, internet again. And so all the 14 communities have it. And people want more. There's a difference between our community channel and what APTN offers. We also produce a series on APTN since the beginning. Right now we produce a series of 6 programs, 30-minute program, and it meets the need of a national broadcaster. Our community television meets the needs of the local people. They want to see, they want to have interviews, they want to see hunting activities, they want to see gatherings. Right now they put a lot of pressure on us to broadcast hockey games, but you know what it is to broadcast a hockey game. Not easy, but people, they want more. And we broadcast now hockey on our radio. So it's there, it's going to get better, but again, if we get cuts, get funding cuts, it's all going to die. We produce, with very little money, we produce right now 15 hours of Inuttitut new programming. We also produce 3 hours of Inuttitut programming for APTN with English subtitle, and we play vintage programming. And again, this was done through, I refer back to the policy, the CRTC policy, because I think what's there, it's very old, but it was very useful. And I think it's important that we mention it.
So I apologize for dashing out. And that's something I had to go to. Well, I think that some of the issues that, as I understand it, particularly in terms of our interaction here, the CBC's interaction with Indigenous groups and communities, community radio, and that kind of thing, it harkens back to what Jack said earlier. And Claude is saying as well, there's an infrastructure issue in many cases that I think most communities are not embroiled in concerns about the policy. They're embroiled in concerns about how can they make this simple thing that they want to do in their community work, and work well, and work consistently. And historically, Claude refers to the fact that the funding levels for the various Native broadcasting programs that the federal government pays for, those have been staying the same or diminishing. And the CBC has also been sort of facing its own round of cost reductions as well. But it's that kind of thing that has made the dream that was Indigenous broadcasting back in the day when some of these programs were originally founded, and when some of the organizations and IBC and TNI and Wawate and all of those organizations were getting going. There were dreams and aspirations that those organizations had that they have struggled valiantly to fulfill over the course of a long period of time. And it's, as Claude says, it's not getting better. People are ingenious, they're smart, they're figuring out ways to do stuff. But I think that any consideration of how Indigenous broadcasting goes forward needs to think about how the policy structure can help the infrastructure to enable people to actually do the kinds of things that they want to do and that they need to do in their communities. It's always been a bit disjointed, different pots of money for different things, different organizations doing different things, and that has not gotten better over time. It's kind of continued to be fragmented. I think the CRTC in the Type A, Type B, when the last review of Indigenous policy, broadcasting policy was undertaken, had the idea that they wanted to be able to allow communities to do whatever it is that they wanted. They wanted the minimum impediment to doing that, so you didn't have long pages of application forms and incorporation and all of those kinds of things that you needed previously. So I think that they were thinking about that, but I think it kind of stopped there, and some of that stuff needs to be reconsidered. And governments and organizations need to figure out ways to better support it, because those are the kinds of struggles that I think people are facing. And I just base that on our experience dealing regularly with community radio people in Nunavut, which we do. Historically, there's a kind of a long and interesting history how this all got to be, but basically the CBC in Nunavut provides access time on its transmitters in communities where we own and operate the transmitters. We do so on a very kind of relaxed basis, the way that we've always done it. There are certain times of the day that we want to make sure those stations are carrying the CBC. There are other times of the day when it's fine, go ahead. We're very flexible around, Jack was mentioning earlier, there's a search and rescue going on in the community. They want to take over the radio for a period of time and do that. And we just say, call and let us know. Now, my bosses at the CBC probably don't know that, and this is being recorded, so I may hear about it later. But I think that it is important to understand that we see our role in this as a cooperative, work together kind of thing, to enable people to use the infrastructure that exists to do the things that they need and want. But there's all kinds of things that are issues here as well. The CBC owns and operates radio transmitters in about half the Nunavut communities. In the smaller communities, they were those locations, those stations or rebroadcasters, I guess I should say, the transmitter facilities were originally installed and operated by the government of the Northwest Territories going back to the 1970s. Just before Nunavut became a separate territory in 1999, the government of the Northwest Territories abandoned those sites in Nunavut. And so since then, in a lot of the smaller communities, the infrastructure that was installed originally in the late 1970s or early 1980s is still there. In some cases, it's still working, kind of, pretty much, sort of. The CBC has helped out with communities fixing transmitters and trying to repair things and stuff, but it's as that infrastructure continues to deteriorate over time, it's becoming a bigger, more important, pressing problem that the communities are looking for places that can help them find the money to get that service back on the air. I don't need to repeat what Jack said about why those services are important, because he said it very eloquently. It is a really important thing in the communities, and I think that, I mean, if you're talking about the CRTC policy, some thought needs to be given about how those kinds of things, those, as you mentioned earlier when you were talking about the number of kind of unlicensed radio stations that exist across the country, some thought needs to be given to infrastructure, to how do you help people have at least the basic facilities that they need to do what they need to do with those facilities in their community. So I think it's quite an interesting thing. I mean, I can't speak for the CBC in terms of the CBC's approach to the policy on Indigenous broadcasting generally, but I think, as Salome likely pointed out while I was out of the room for a few minutes, we do a lot of programming in an institute here. People consider it an important part of things, and when the local radio isn't on and they can't do local radio, people call us and say, we need to get local radio back on. If they can't hear the CBC, they call us and say, we need to get the CBC back on. Because the two pieces of it make for the kind of the fuller package of things that people are able to receive in their community that I think most people think are very important. Even in the modern digital universe, some people are listening to the radio on their smartphones or other devices, but a lot of people are still listening to the radio, and a lot of people are still watching television. We're now doing, we've made, on the television front, I mean, we do in Institute, we do a daily half-hour Institute language television news program called Igalak, which runs from 6 to 6:30 p.m. Eastern Time across the north. It actually goes in Nunavut, the Northwest Territories, Nunavik, parts of northern Labrador. And we've made some efforts in the last couple of years. The hosting of the program is now done here. It used to be done in Illinois. And we're struggling to find ways to make it a bigger and more effective program within the constraints of what we have to deal with. But it's an important part of things as well. So we see, I think, our role as being complementary to all of the other things that the different organizations are doing to try and make sure that there's a full range of programming that's available in Inuktitut, from us, from IBC, from TNI, from all of the other organizations, particularly from Isuma as well, some of the interesting things that they're doing. I gather Zach's going to hook up this afternoon, maybe?
Unfortunately not.
No?
Yeah, they canceled on us last minute. I forgot to mention that.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, that's too bad, because I think, because Isuma has doing some really interesting things as well in terms of sort of envisioning the how do you get the distribution of the programming out to people without necessarily even having to worry about the CRTC and transmitters and infrastructure and all that kind of stuff. It's all about put it on the web, and as soon as the web technology gets better, I think people will be able to use that quite frequently and regularly as a programming source. So I think that's an interesting thing as well, and one hopes that would be continue to be encouraged, because it's a great way of enabling producers to get material out without having to worry so much about the infrastructure. But anyway, my last point would be to kind of follow up on what Jack said. Radio is still really important, and particularly in small communities, it's not a place that produces programming for an audience. It's a service that is the audience speaking to each other by picking up the phone, by running down to the station, by bringing somebody in to who's speaking in town, as Jack said as well. You know, that there's an opportunity there that's often being missed by governments and researchers and community groups and whatever, to use this as a way to facilitate a conversation in the community about something that's important in Inuktitut. So it's kind of a, it's, and I think people who've been involved in it for a long time sort of see it as one of those things where, like Claude says, you keep struggling. We're going to make this happen. We're going to make this happen. Because it is such a valuable and important thing that not everybody recognizes all the time. I think one day more of them will wake up and realize it, do you think? because there is such tremendous potential there.
I'll just add one more. One of the things that Inuktitut language has been in history is an oral language where there's no text whatsoever. So, and because of its history, the way it was passed on, we're still very much into radio and television listening. Television is probably more popular because, well, they're both the same, but, you know, Igala has become quite popular in terms of its visuals and the stories we're doing. Because of its oral history, it's the radio and television are not going to die soon, even though there's internet. Yes, there's Facebook. It was on Facebook. But where do you get your latest news immediately? It's through radio in Inuktitut, 6:30 in the morning. And 6 o'clock at night, and throughout the day. So because of its oral history and the way radio and television is still going to be very important for us. So even if internet is here, it's super slow. Even if our young population is much higher, well, slightly higher, 55% under 25 years of age, are Inuit. So yes, they are into internet stuff, but it's so slow they don't even bother to open a video in Pugnitho, for example, because you can't just play YouTube at all. It'll download all day long. So in terms of the internet not being accessible and our young age is still here, I think they're still going to grab what's on radio and what's on television that today, unless there's a huge impact, a huge change in internet, and we're just like Toronto today, then maybe it'll shift through internet. But for now, we're the first when it comes to weather, first when it comes to news, first when it comes to current affairs, stories of the day. So we're immediate source today, but it could change if and when we get the best internet in the whole wide world.
Very often we go to organizations and we say, hey, we need money. We're in bad shape, we get cuts, and what do you need money for? Your radio is playing. You know, you're on the air, it's there, so you don't need money. But when they stop receiving our radio, or when the local radio breaks down, guess who they call? It's urgent. Christmas is coming. Christmas activities, we have no radio, it's not working. You have to fix it. And communication is like that. When it's working, it's a perfect world. When it breaks down, it's a crisis, you know. I would like to mention one thing about our community channel that I forgot to mention. The local cables, they provide free analog channels, three channels, to heat each household for free. In Inuktitut, there's the CBC North, there's the APTN, and the TNI channel. This is great. If someone doesn't have money to subscribe to cable, they still get some channels. And if you want to subscribe to the cable, then you get a package and you have TNI in there and CBC North and other channels. I wanted to mention, TNI is a not-for-profit, and our mandate is to provide radio and television services for free. It is still the case today. With radio, maybe I'll wait later because it's within the CRTC advertising and a few other things that are. So if you allow me, I'd like to say a few words about APTN. We are a founding member of APTN. We produce series every year for APTN. Right now, everybody is looking for money, including APTN. They are in the process of a request for proposals right now, and we were doing a 6-episode for them. Now they're asking for a 13-episode. And when we do a production for APTN, it's a different story because the standards are way higher. You need a lot more money to produce a video program for APTN than you do for a community video. Like I said, the community video program, people are pleased to have an elder talking about stories. You can film him for half an hour and they're pleased with that. You know, they're happy with that. Don't take the same video and put it on APTN. It's not going to work. So right now there's a request for proposals, and us from 6 to 13, we double the money. Where do we get the money? Even in the request for proposal, APTN is saying we cannot tell you when first payment will be made. So you have to take that into consideration when you do your finance plan, your financing plan. How can you do that? You know? We don't even know what kind of money we'll be getting from NAB yet. Do we get more? Do we get less? Do we get any at all? We don't know. We sent our proposal before, I think it was November 2016. We had a situation where we got our money from Canadian Heritage in November. We're operating since April 1st. We have people to pay. This finance, this funding has to be resolved somewhere, somehow. Because we're, like I mentioned earlier, we're in the process of cutting, and we know very well that if we don't produce any programs for APTN, NEB will cut us. Because it's a national broadcaster, it's a lot more important and than our community television. And we agree that APTN should be there because it's part of our mandate to let Canadians know about Inuit. You know, we're part of Canada, and I think it's very important. Yes, sir?
Oh, I'm feeling what you're saying.
Did you guys have anything to mention about APTN?
Well, we don't. The CBC doesn't really had originally a relationship with the Television Northern Canada, which was the predecessor to APTN, but that went its separate ways many years ago. So, although I certainly understand, I mean, I think that this comes back to that question again of funding and stability of funding and the ability to do things. I mean, at the CBC, we face budget cuts, but I don't have to worry about whether or not I'm going to get funded. I know at the beginning of the year how that's going to go, you know, for sort of for better or worse, and you can plan accordingly. And I know that a number of the Indigenous broadcasting groups have had a terrible time with that fact that it is unclear. I think you make a really interesting point, because even inside the CBC, we have this thing a little bit too, where you have a local audience that's really important to you, and you have this different responsibility to a national audience as well. And as the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, we feel that acutely. And it's a struggle for us too sometimes, because it may be that the longer interview program that you're doing that simply has somebody talking on the air for an hour, it really is very appreciated by the local audience, but your national people are wondering, well, why are you doing that? Why aren't you doing this? Because as the national, as the Canadian public broadcaster, you have these other responsibilities. So we juggle those kinds of things as well. And I think that both have their place, you know, and we see that as being important on both sides. But I haven't really anything that I could say about APTN, because we don't, the CBC doesn't have a relationship with them. We, as a result, don't deal with them all that often anymore. Occasionally, but all that often. So.
Are we ready to have questions, or do you have more to say?
I'll have more about the CRTC process and CRTC policy.
Madeline said she's on her way.
Okay.
So, I guess there are so many elements that this brings forward, but I think when you think about the CRTC, it seems to perceive that a license is an asset, that once we get a license, we're like, hallelujah, we're all going to make money, and you know this. And in the South, having a radio bandwidth or broadcasting is a resource. It's something that you can then turn into, you know, you follow their rules, and then you get to do your advertising, you get to do whatever, and it's a benefit to you. But in most of the communities where they're local broadcasters, it's a responsibility, because now, like, it's not like they gave you a place on the bandwidth. There's nobody else on the bandwidth. Like, you turn on the radio, and it goes to, like, one station. Maybe there's something else that's getting repeated. So it isn't like they're giving us an asset when the CRTC gives you a license. They're sort of confirming what is already in place. I think there's an idea that APTN is a funding resource for local television or local Aboriginal broadcasting, because the Aboriginal Broadcasting Societies were put into the shotgun marriage with APTN. And that is not the case. APTN doesn't fund or trickle down funding to the regional or the local societies. It works as a national broadcaster, and it carries productions which local societies compete for like everybody else. So you're not making your administration money or your rent money or anything out of the productions that you're putting into APTN. So if APTN gets a decent increase in terms of its cable fees, that doesn't parlay itself into an increase for the local broadcasting societies. It's nice that we have exemptions and that we don't have to do a whole bunch of paperwork, but it's almost like communities have an inherent right to a community radio station anyway. What would the CRTC be doing to tell them not to broadcast? That doesn't make any sense. So, I think it's like so many things that it's like airlines and stores and all those other things that we struggle with and we try and make work, and we don't necessarily have economies that work. In the South, many of those things at a certain point were supported or regulated, and now that the economy has been enhanced and populations are larger, Southern Canada says, like with the post office or whatever, well, you don't need it, or we don't have to regulate it. And yet, when we've got small populations, smaller economies, not the internal economy to support those things, we still have a fundamental need to get news, to understand what's happening, to share information. And the regulator is founding itself on the idea of Southern communities and Southern resources. The other thing I was thinking about was the diaspora, like all the Inuit who are living in Southern communities, in Ottawa and Montreal and other communities, and they're connecting to community and maintaining their connection and identity through listening to Internet CBC, through listening to local news and affairs. It's so much underlying everything that happens in our communities, all our politics, all our elections, and yet it's, as Claude says, just out of mind. Much of what Patrick is talking about the CBC doing, you have to recognize that a large part of that is what Patrick Nagel is doing, because it is not in his job description. It's so far from his job description that he gets hacked, I'm sure, on occasion for how much time and energy he puts into those things. But it's inherently because he's come from Palahatki and because he's in the situation and supporting people in his shop, that, and the rebroadcast, obviously, that's the excuse to hang it on. But this isn't facilitated. This isn't supported by CRTC. The things that Claude has done are because of personal commitment. So the system shouldn't be turning on that. And the salaries for everybody, from APTN through to all the other broadcasters, even somebody as theoretically wealthy as APTN, in no way match the salaries that people get as a communications officer for the government or for Makovic or for any of those things. So you're already operating at a disability. Then you have the presumption that there's training. Oh, it's okay, people will come out of the colleges, you'll have journalism, we have all these systems in place to produce people with these skills. We don't. That's not this economy. That is a perception of somewhere else, or even the idea that everybody's going to go and get trained in Toronto and come back. How is that going to work? You know, dislocating your family and moving out of language and everything like that. So the entire perception of what the support structures are for native language broadcasting, for Indigenous television, for all those kinds of things, nobody's seeing it from what the needs of the community are up. They're all seeing it from the application. It starts with the application, and that doesn't really make sense. If they're going to rewrite the policy, why don't they look at it from what does a community need? And how can the CRTC be part of the structure that supports what communities need? That would be the other way around, because it's all driven by an application. Somebody comes and says, I want a license. And their perception that that's an asset that they're giving out. And if they're really going to do the policy right, look what communities need, and then how can CRTC permit this to be built and supported and to thrive? And that includes things they don't even think about, like training. And vocabulary building and all kinds of things. So that's, if you're going to build a policy, start there at what communities need. And it, Wawate has that same need, the same need we have here. The whole thing that you were talking about the fighting over the urban licenses, that's just interesting trivia in terms of what northern communities. It's not even interesting trivia. Just like what somebody else's business is, fine, let them argue. So all those have to be part of any consideration of policy. It can't start from an application.
I'd like to ask a question. Since Minister Hicks is here, what about GN kicking in some money? Because, you know, I understand there's a lack of funding, but can GN help? Because GN represents government of Nunavut, so it's a local thing, and we need money to run our local show. So if somebody at GN could kick in some money for training, for anything, that would help.
He is meant to speak after this panel, so if you want to address it now, or
I can, it's not really related to what I'm going to be talking about later, so I can address it now.
Okay.
There is some funding through community government services for community radio. That being said, I also had a question just leading up to Patrick, we were talking earlier about some of the community radios that are piggybacking on to CBC infrastructure. Is it to their detriment to apply for any type of infrastructure type funding that, like through Heritage Canada or through other funding pots available, whether it be through the government of Nunavut or anywhere else? If it's CBC infrastructure, is it to the detriment of the community radio to have that link to be able to apply for improvements to the infrastructure or additional resources? Because it could be considered a CBC asset?
No, I don't think it would be to the detriment in any way, shape, or form. I mean, there's what's happened with the way that community radio has kind of grown up in Nunavut over the here. We'll
drink my
coffee.
There's only one.
So there's no. I mean, the way the community radio grew up in Nunavut was that it started initially as this kind of relationship between the local community and the CBC in many cases. When under the what was called the Accelerated Coverage Plan in the mid-1970s, CBC got some money to put radio and television rebroadcasters into every community in Canada that had a population more than 500 people at that time. So under that program, Pongatou, Pond Inlet, Cape Dorset, Igloo Lake, Rankin, Tilladjoac, Joehaven, Cambridge Bay, and so on and so forth, those communities all got a CBC rebroadcaster. And initially, my understanding of it is that the plan was there would be a transmitter that would rebroadcast CBC radio, and a transmitter that would rebroadcast CBC television. But when they did some consultations and went to those communities and said, we're about to bring this to you, many of the communities said, well, you're going to bring in a whole, I mean, it's great, you guys have Inuktitut on the radio, that's great, you don't have any Inuktitut on television. We want some control over what goes on, because we perceive that the invasion of English that this will bring will have an impact on our community. So the agreement, long story short, the agreement was, at least on the radio side, that there would be community access. So the CBC initially said, we will put in a package of studio equipment. We will give you a switch that you can turn that on and put your local programming on, and when you split the switch in the other direction, it will put the CBC on. And then the CBC, they provided some a limited amount of initial training to people, and developed a kind of a set of quote-unquote rules that went along with this. And one of the rules was, we give you a list of the times that you can broadcast and the times that you can't. And it was, initially it was fairly rigid, and it became more fluid over the course of time. And as over the course of time, CBC had less time to spend kind of policing it. So so it grew up as a kind of a cooperative thing. How it's evolved is, in some communities, Rankin Inlet, for example, didn't want to sort of abide by the schedule that the CBC thought was appropriate for local radio. So they said, we'd like to go get our own local radio station. And the CBC said, absolutely fine, go ahead. What they did was they obtained their own transmitter and their own studio facilities, and they set up really a separate operation. So the CBC transmitter now in Rankin Inlet doesn't have local radio on it. They have their own local radio there. We help out a little bit. If our transmitter techs are in town and somebody needs something looked at, well, you know, we can do what we can to help that out. So in all of the cases where people have moved away from the CBC, they've gone to set up their own transmitter, because it gives them the option of doing kind of whatever they want, whenever they want, and there's no need to deal with the CBC over scheduling and stuff. Some communities have been reticent to do that. They don't want to do it. They're concerned about, well, what about the infrastructure? Who's going to pay for it? What happens when the transmitter breaks? Right now, we can have access time pretty much what we want on the CBC transmitter, and so we're happy to just stay that way rather than to go a more independent route. So I don't, and the CBC certainly has really only been supportive of situations where people want to get their own transmitter. So we're not in any way, shape, or form stepping in and saying, no, you can't do that, or you shouldn't do that, or we don't want it to be this way. If that's what the community wants to do, then by all means. And in some instances, we've been able to help out in a small way with equipment and advice and help and that sort of thing. So I think if a community wants to do that, having the current relationship with the CBC doesn't cause them any problems. Because there have been a number of situations now where people have just been able to go off and do it. The bigger issue tends to be the community gets the money together, they buy the facilities, they get a room at the Hamlet office or whatever to do it. They get all ready to go. It goes fine for a few years, and then something breaks, and then they're going, well, where do we go to get some money to replace the blah blah blah, our transmitter? You know, something happened and somebody spilled the coffee in it and it doesn't work anymore, so now what do we do? And that's tends to be where it all breaks down a little bit, and we have some instances where people are coming back to us saying, can we abandon this our own independent thing that we did and come back with you guys, because we can't deal with the problems that has caused. And we think that's a problem, because it kind of takes us back a step in a way, which is really not probably the way that that everybody wants it to go. Does that answer your question? Yeah.
Thanks, Patrick. And I realize I didn't really answer your question properly, Cindy, but When we're talking about infrastructure through the Government of Nunavut, applications such as what you're talking about, community radio, I don't know all the programs that the government has. I'm Minister of Health, and I worry about the health programs that are available primarily. That being said, I do know there is supports out there for community radio through government services, and I believe some through culture and heritage as well, too, but I'm not familiar with all the programs.
We have about 10 minutes left, and he still has a bit to say.
Okay.
We take one question, go back to him, and then just to respect the time, because the minister also probably has other things that he wants to do today.
So. I work at the college. I manage NAC Media, and we're 2 years in on this project. And I think the college, I can't speak definitively about this because I'm low on the rung, but there is discussions to develop a media arts program at the college. And through my department, we're certainly making some headway and some strides towards that. When we first started this 2 years ago, one of the first things I looked into was to start a community radio station because, as many people know, colleges and universities have their own radio stations. It's a very, it can be a very effective medium for students to be training and to, for young people and faculty as well to do interesting work. But I quickly realized it was going to flood me and it would be my whole job, so I bailed quick. However, what we want to be doing is providing content. That's something we feel we can be doing. We have, to Salome's point, with regards to the Igloolik, we have the Igloolik Oral History Project, 530-something interviews, which all in Inuktitut, and they have played on the community radio in Igloolik for many years when John McDonald and Leah Otak managed that Oral History Center, and I'm not sure what the current state of affairs is, but I know Amy there, who runs that community station, may still put some on.
He still does some Saturday.
Great.
Things, yeah.
Right, and that's something from what I've learned, people absolutely loved that opportunity to sit down with a morning coffee on Saturday and hear traditional knowledge, stories, and oral histories from the Igloolik area. So that's something, that type of programming is something we're very eager to be doing. To Pat's point, we're trying to use local the existing local infrastructure as much as we can. Whether that's we're chatting with the co-op about using their TV station. So we've had, we tried NAC TV a couple weeks ago, actually, with Solomon. His hunting video that we made, the seal hunting video we aired. So we want to be putting Inuktitut programming on the air, both TV and in radio. What I'm looking for is someone with Inuktitut speaker who can learn the skills of editing, because we want to be doing podcasts, because we have all this content, we just need to produce it. And that's the difficulty I'm having now, is finding someone with an Inuktitut speaker who was willing to learn how to sit down at an editing bay. We have the ability to train that person, and chances are we'll be able to find funds to make that happen. But to be able to do that, that's a struggle we're having right now, is just producing the aggregate of content we have. So from the college's point of view, from NAC Media's point of view, we're really interested in speaking to local providers here to see, to learn what you might want on in terms of local programming, and how we can help fill that gap. So I'll just throw that out there. So the actual CRTC pieces I've left behind, but maybe I shouldn't. But it just seems it was just getting really buried quick, and I don't think I'm alone as someone in this territory, and especially as a GN worker. I have very supportive supervisors, but I work alone mostly, And I don't think that's too uncommon for people. You got to figure this stuff out on your own. So I think as if we can get more people at the table to kind of support one another, I would certainly be interested in being part of that. So thanks for the opportunity.
And we should talk more about the media arts program.
Okay.
And you should say your name for the record.
Oh, sorry, Sean. My name's Sean. Uvunga Sean. Christine.
Back to coaches for a second, and he'll have the 10 minutes, then I'll give it to the minister, and we can continue questions. But Sean, arts program will be interesting. I was actually paid as consultant to do a similar project out west to create a new program. So I won't go into detail of who the client was, but I can offline fill you in on that and the process that they went through, and the partnerships that they were creating and the infrastructure they had to even develop the program, etc.
Yeah, and I think too, just considering media as an art, I think, I don't know the stats on this, but some of the most artists per capita in Canada, I think with this younger population, the youngest population, I think presenting media arts as a possibility as an art form, it's already happening. But if we can provide some spaces for young people to do this towards a career, if you want to call it that, which I think is fine to say, we would want to help support that, because there's incredible work going on in this territory and in this town, with whether it's animation, whether it's film, whether it's you name it.
Performance.
Like, there's a lot going on right now, and I think from the college's point of view, we want to let young people know that this is an option for you, and we're going to help you build those skills.
Yeah. And there's some examples I could share with you from Montreal and Quebec too, how they create incubators to do that too.
Yeah, and that's something we're working on. Yeah.
Cool.
Thank you. Now I'll get into the CRTC policy, CRTC review, and CRTC policy. Just a few points that I'd like to bring up. First of all, there's a need to assess the situation. Our last audience survey was in 2004, 2005. Funding was gone, so we stopped doing it, but I think it would be important to go back to the communities and find out from the people what really they want to hear on radio, TV, and so on. What are the new needs? Also, I wanted to say quickly that we agree with the definition of native undertaking in the native broadcast policy. We also agree with the native program, the definition of native program in the native broadcast policy. Those were very helpful, and I think they can still be helpful. It's not complicated, it's straightforward, and I think we were able to work with it. Keep in mind that our organization, everything we do is 100% Inuttitut. If someone wants to play a radio commercial on our radio, it has to be Inuttitut first. If they want to play it English and French, that's fine, but it has to be Inuttitut. The only problem we have is, and it's in the policy, the music thing there. We try as much as possible to play Inuttitut music from the different Inuttitut groups, but there's not enough. So for sure we get to a point where we have to mix Inuttitut and very often English, but we also play some country French music. Okay, just advertising. The way it is in the policy, radio advertising is fine with us. We do some advertising. It's a very important revenue for us. It's not a lot, and it fluctuates. From one year we get more, another year we get less. But what we get is very important. But we are within the policy framework for advertising. promises of performance, which is in the policy, just to say that we already have that when we prepare our proposal to NAB. It's already there. If they want it, you know, it's, we have to include it in our proposal to NAB. We also, just for your information, we also initiated a yearly radio membership for regional organization. With this membership, the organization pays so much per year, and what we do in return, we broadcast their AGM, and we also let their president come on our radio and provide information to our listeners, and a few other services. So this also really helped us to increase our revenues. Again, it's not big amounts, but it's there and it helps. We are planning to offer advertising on our community channel. I think it is important to keep the CRTC's exemption for native radio stations. It would be great if we could have long-term, 5 years, agreement funding with Canadian Heritage. We've been asking for this for a long time. There was a question in regards to the CRTC consultation process. What we would like to suggest is that before the CRTC consultation process takes place, we would like to suggest that a policy review committee be created. The policy review committee would include one or two members from each of the 13 regional native communication societies and other stakeholders, such as EPTN, and others that we don't know about. With a few members of the CRTC, the policy specialists, to review all policies specific to native broadcasting. The role of the policy review committee would be to revise all policies and make recommendations to the regional native communication societies members and other stakeholders. From these public from there, public consultation could take place through, in our case, our region, radio information sessions and call-in shows. This would be done in Inuktitut in our region, so documents would have to be translated. This is a suggestion that can be looked at. That's all for us. Thank you.
I have a quick question, Claude. Do they, in Type A stations, there when they're not requiring Canadian content for radio, are they? And music? No.
Okay.
Well, there's an interesting oddball thing that happens that we bump into occasionally, which is CRTC classifies music by, you know, country, rock, pop, classical, yada yada. And they classify Indigenous language music as what they call traditional special interest categories, along with serious jazz and classical music and so on and so forth. And so if we're counting our Canadian content and we play, you know, a pop tune by, you know, you name it, French or English, it's considered one category of music. If we play Northern Haze doing heavy metal rock and roll in Inuktitut, it's along with classical music. I have some very interesting arguments sometimes with the CBC people who monitor CRTC compliance. Your Canadian content is, well, it's because we keep playing all this music in Inuktitut. So I said, I invite them to come down and argue with me about it. No one ever has. So I didn't have anything else to add. So.
I think it's very important what we do in Inuktitut broadcasting. It's probably one of the most important things that we do in Nunavut. And I think that should be considered under whatever policy is going to be renew or whatever, because we are probably the, in terms of media world, we are the media world for Inuit for now. Could change, like I said, but we're very still important to the people who live here, who needs to know what's going on.
Thank you. Thank you to all three of you. I think we can applaud them and thank them for their participation. And this ties in, just before I leave the minister, to tack onto what you said there, Patrick. In Winnipeg, Miles Morisot actually suggested NatCon, a native content, to have have quotas for that too. Despite the problems that exist with CanCon, and having done my PhD on license renewals, I can attest to all the discrepancies and non-compliance issues with that process.